28th and lasts only 2 weeks. Remember to vote for WRUU in the categories of Best Local Radio Station and Best Local Talk Radio. If you see a favorite WRUU morning program or WRUU radio host, please vote for them as well. Thank you for listening to and voting for WRUU in the Connect Savannah Best of Savannah poll. This portion of WRUU Savannah Soundings programming is brought to you by listeners and the Ships of the Sea Museum. The wait is over. The Ships of the Sea Museum has reopened. With access to the first floor, we are one of two historic museums with accessibility lift. The gift shop is filled with local specialties such as handcrafted soaps and cheese straws, a savory southern tradition. More information can be found at shipsofthesea.org.
What does it mean when we say that WRUU is a community radio station? It doesn't just mean that we invite the community to create programming, and it doesn't just mean that we are a voice for the community. It also means that we are counting on the community to keep us going, and you are the community. Almost all of our modest budget comes from small annual or monthly donations from listeners like you. You get to enjoy our community-focused programming because many others have stepped forward to do their part. Now do your part by joining our community of listener donors. Go to WRUU.org right now and make a one-time or monthly donation. And thank you for supporting Savannah's community radio station, 107.5 FM.
Now, and running through the end of February, Location Gallery at the corner of Liberty and Bull Streets is holding a 300 and under sale of original artwork. All purchases during this period will benefit WRUU. Gallery hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays and 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturdays. You can also find and shop at Location Gallery online at www.locationgallery.net.
Estos son los sonidos de una cena. Una cena que casi no sucedió. Es una cena servida gracias a personas como tú. Debido a la crisis actual, 50 millones de personas pueden vivir con hambre este año. Feeding America está ayudando a los que más lo necesitan. Y si quieres, tú puedes ayudar también. Visita feedingamerica.org/en-español. Patrocinado por el Ad Council y Feeding America, la fuerza de 200 bancos de alimentos.
My people in the East, yo, you gotta wake up. Midwest, dirty South, yo, you gotta stand up. All my homies in the West, yo, you gotta wake up.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up.
Savannah, you are tuned in to the highest news your way twice a week in an hour, just for you. Anything that you hear on today's show is not necessarily that of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. All right, let that play out just a second. We're going to have Dr. Jacek Lubecki, who's going to be talking and breaking down the Ukraine conflict. We're going to talk news for a little bit here while we get you started this morning. On your drive time hour on the highest news your way twice a week in an hour, just for you. All right. Well, first up, if you have not been paying attention to what's going on in Glenn County, Well, there was a federal hate crime ruling where all three members who were a part of the Ahmaud Arbery shooting, the death, have all been convicted of hate crime. So what is next for the men after 2 years, 2 years later? Just this month through April, May, when we were just discovering what happened with Ahmaud Arbery, what's going to happen now? 2 years after his death, the family were delivered the guilty verdict in federal court. The hate crime trial shows the world what's going on with Ahmaud Arbery, according to Mother Wanda Cooper. The men, Travis McMichael, William Roddy Bryan, and Gregory McMichael, were all convicted of hate crimes, in addition to attempted kidnapping and other charges. Prosecutors in the federal trial and the testimony detailed publicly using inflammatory, derogatory language, including racial slurs. What happened to Ahmaud Arbery? During the closing rebuttal, prosecutors emphasized Arbery was killed because he was black. The three defendants did not see 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery as a fellow human, according to U.S. Attorney Tara Lyons. She said there was a question of remorse. There wasn't a perceived lack of remorse for them in the shooting. McMichaels claimed that they pursued him in a vehicle to stop him for police. The men were convicted of in state court for murder charges. The family was critical of an early plea deal following the guilty verdicts. Cooper, with the Department of Justice, proposed a plea deal in January, chastised the plea deal in January. Cooper Jones spoke to the Department of Justice and begged them not to take the deal. Well, following that moment 2 years ago, a more warming sign, a park has been named after Ahmaud, a place that Ahmaud would go. The park has been renamed Ahmaud Arbery Park. This is done by the Glenn County Public Works and Maintenance Department. All right. I found some interesting news and something I'm known for the for quite some time, but a TikTok of Savannah Laurel Grove's cemetery. Play this for you.
Hey y'all, we're back with another Black History video, and today we're discovering the hidden gem known as Laurel Grove South Cemetery. Laurel Grove South Cemetery is Savannah's most significant final resting place for Black Americans who died in the 19th and 20th centuries. Developed in 1850 on the west side of Savannah, on a portion of the former Springfield Plantation, Laurel Grove was named after the native laurel oak trees which once inhabited the site. Laurel Grove is a culturally and historically significant site for Black American religion, education, civil rights, and business. While slavery was still legal, more free Black Americans were interred in Laurel Grove South than any other cemetery in the Southeast region. Consisting of 90 acres, the cemetery is a public park-like open space with massive cypress trees towering from its wetlands. It's open to the public daily from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. This historic burial site is a beauty to see and is full of prominent Black residents that contributed remarkably to the city of Savannah. Such as Reverend Andrew Bryan, born 1716 as an enslaved person, laid to rest fall of 1812 as a free man. Reverend Bryan's legacy is remembered as the founder and first pastor of the historic First African Baptist Church, now known as the First Bryan Baptist Church. Or Mrs. Annie Nuttall, born 1831, laid to rest summer of 1920. She's remembered as a member of the first nursing class of the McCain Training School, a devoted nurse, and co-founder of the Charity Hospital. And we can't forget Soul C. Johnson, born in 1867, laid to rest in 1954. Johnson is most notably remembered as the previous owner of the Savannah Tribune, an elected official with the Masons, an organizer with the Order of the Eastern Star, a trustee of the Charity Hospital and Carnegie Library, and an organizer of the West Broad Street YMCA. His name continues to ring bells since the Chatham County Board of Public Education named the high school in his honor. As previously stated by W.W. Law, the Stones in Laurel Grove South mark the graves of Savannah's most prominent black citizens and oldest black families. This cemetery is a historic gem. For more information on Laurel Grove South, visit the link below. Hey y'all, we're back with another Black History video.
Okay, that link is with the City of Savannah government where you can go to find out more about Laurel Grove South. There are a few companies that do tours of Laurel Grove South. A former co-host of mine, Ray, actually has a company that goes out and does those. He'll be back in the fall. He is in the hospital right now. Prayers up for Ray. He had COVID after his kidney transplant. Now, a new generation of Chevrolet has airless tires. That's right, has airless tires. Michelin was working with General Motors to develop this airless tire, which it could make the decline of over 130 years of tire tradition end, so you wouldn't need to put air in your tire. So basically, this is going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years. GM has not confirmed that it is working on a new car called the Chevrolet Bolt, but it is. It's an EV car with a wide variety of electric vehicles that will be affordable at a price that you can afford. GM has attested the airless tire on current generation Bolt cars. Companies have been open about making a airless tire. And it makes sense. Like, you have them. Like, there's some bicycles and there's plastic tires, so why do we need, why can't we have airless tires? I don't understand why we can't with today's technology. There are reasons why airless tires haven't been used on passenger cars in over a century. Air does have its advantages. It's pressurized. And it provides resistance when you're running over things. So, for instance, a driver taking a four-wheel drive car off-road might reduce the air pressure in the tires, which allows the tires to flatten out a bit, creating a larger footprint area on loose sand or dirt. These tires that are, air tires get reinflated when the truck goes back to driving on asphalt. Also, car companies have been engineering cars and suspension systems for a century, say that air-inflated tires are better when riding and perform differently when you don't have air in your tires. So, pretty interesting there. Pretty interesting. Okay. There is a hiring event going on with the City of Savannah today. Okay, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. They will have on-site interviews. And this is going to be located at the Floyd Adams City Services Complex. That is the Interchange Court. It's accessible by public transit. It's happening today. People make a minimum of $15 an hour. So, you can go to www.governmentjobs.com/careers./Savannah. Not dot Savannah, but backslash Savannah. This is a full-fledged palindrome week. We had 2/21/22. We have 2/22/22/22 yesterday. We have 2/23/22 today. And then you have 2/24/22, 2/25/22, 2/26/22, 2/27/22, and 28. 2/28. I like that one the best. 2/28. because it makes you want to stop and then say 22. If you're a hip hop person, you kind of get that. So, this is the Tuesday week. Sorry, that was sad. Okay, what's in the news? Let's see. Western nations impose sanctions and cut off pipelines with Russia after Putin orders troops into Ukraine's breakaway regions. Biden says Russia has begun an invasion of Ukraine and announces sanctions yesterday, just 16 hours ago. Europe faces for further strife as Ukraine crisis escalates. They're about to go to war. I mean, everything says that there's about to be a war. And, of course, America's going to be right in the middle of it with NATO. Sanctions have started. Russia's trade flow is shifting towards China and away from America. The Russian-Ukraine crisis, Kiev to impose emergency as U.S. allies pressure Russia with sanctions. China says Taiwan is not Ukraine, and island raises an alert level. China's leaders may be watching Ukraine with an eye on Taiwan. This just sounds like a good little World War III in the making. Hopefully it stays to a certain level and doesn't involve our good women and men going overseas. All right. Ex-president, the 45th-er, says Putin's genius Ukraine move as E. Jean Carroll proceeds with case. A grocery store and a hotel are listed in development plan east of the historic district. Let's see where this is going to go. Okay, this is the part. This will go in the President's Square plan. A city agreement with a private landowner could transform the Eastern Gateway into Savannah's historic district. 16 acres of land south of East President Street between Truman and General McIntosh Boulevard has sat mostly empty for years. The only landmarks are dilapidated warehouses and a homeless camp. That's the area off to the side that they moved the homeless out of and then put under the bridge back in about 2013 to 2015. And it's been empty, and it's sort of right across from that the area down on the Eastern Wharf. That's where that is. So this would be after, of course, a pending lawsuit that's been going on for years in Savannah on how to rezone and land use, commercial use. Once they get through all the plethora of disagreement, there will be a part where the property owner will tear down the warehouse where all the homeless were moved out of under the bridge to improve drainage and sewage for the area and start with the redevelopment. That landowner will give a public right-of-way to widen the Bilbo Baggins Canal. It's called the Bilbo Canal. I'm going to call it the Bilbo Baggins Canal. Of East President Street and a temporary construction easement at the Oglethorpe Forest main project. I like Bilbo Baggins. Huge fan. So the landowner will contribute $2 million towards the city's canal construction. The blighted warehouse will be demolished after 5 years, and the city will dismiss the blight law source. Of course it will. It's probably been hanging in the balance to keep other people from acquiring the property. The city manager and zoning staff agree to support the rezoning of the property from light industrial to community business to the downtown central business district. In exchange, the city agrees to convey an adjacent 3.3-acre tract of the city land at no cost to the landowner. The city council is expected to discuss the development agreement and take a vote during its regular meeting planned at 6:30 at City Hall. Wow. That is awesome and impressive. Very cool. All righty. What else we got? Susan Zielecki Watson. She is working to coming to an end on, while the show is wrapping up. Her show is wrapping up. Okay. The mayor pro tem of the city of Port Wentworth says that the orchestrated walkout was orchestrated by the mayor. A mayor pro tem is a good friend of mine. I will say that there's a lot to it. Maybe we can do a show on it. The Vampire Diaries creator new show is heading back to streaming after bouncing from Netflix to the CW. Wow. Okay. If you're one of those fans. So, if you want to check out Putin's speech, there's an annotated version. And you can take a close look at the Russian leader's Ukraine address. On why war is the biggest horror, according to Russians, who brace for deadly conflict among economic hardship as Putin orders invasion of Ukraine. China is one of the BRIC states, and that's why China is supporting. But we're going to hear a lot about that coming up. Jamie Lee Curtis writes a goodbye note to the city of Savannah as she finishes shooting the Halloween movie. She says, "Thank you for the city of Savannah, Georgia, for taking such a lovely host city to the final Halloween movie. Thank you to the staff at the mansion on Old Forsyth Park, where I lived, and all my family's playing and couples leaning in and children running free and volleyball players spiking and girls playing cards on a lovely day. And dogs and dogs and dogs and more dogs playing in Forsyth Park. And the gorgeous trees and my favorite, the Japanese magnolia that bloomed during my stay." She said it was a beautiful city with a challenging history that seems to have reconciled its past and embraces a more inclusive future. My time in Georgia was welcoming, and I will miss the many lovely people and beautiful places and many dogs I met while playing my Rooney. All right, playing with my Rooney. That must be her dog. All right, Jamie Lee Curtis, who I just think is an amazing woman. All right, we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back on the Verb Attitude Hour with Yasik Lubecki, who's going to be talking to us this morning. Oh, Hirsch, the pedicab driver, says that they filmed right across from his house. Hirsch is one of my favorite people. Thank you, Hirsch, for listening this morning. All right. Well, we'll be back in just a few minutes with Yasik Lubecki, and we'll break down the Ukrainian conflict here and talk more about what is going to happen when war comes to Ukraine.
This portion of WRUULP Savannah Soundings programming is brought to you by listeners and the Ships of the Sea Museum. The Ships of the Sea Museum is a member of the National Trust for Historic Preservation's Distinctive Destinations Program. The William Scarborough House is the earliest example of the use of Greek Revival architecture in the domestic setting, and this year is the 200th anniversary of the Scarborough House. Find out more about Ships of the Sea Museum at the website shipsofthesea.org. The Mediation Center of the Coastal Empire helps people from all walks of life who are trying to resolve their conflicts without going to court. The Mediation Center's Family Law Resource Center helps families who are experiencing difficulties in navigating the legal system. The Mediation Center also has volunteering opportunities for those who want to make a difference in their community. Please visit www.mediationsavannah.com to connect with them and to learn more about their programs and services.
Tuesday, November 30th, is Giving Tuesday, and that is a great day to give to WRUU. Well, every day is a great day to give to WRUU, but Giving Tuesday is a great specific reason to give. So if you missed donating to Connect Savannah's 2021 Best Local Radio Station and Best Talk Radio Station during our recent on-air fundraising drive, take the time on November 30th, Giving Tuesday, to donate to WRUU.
All right, well, welcome back to the Verb Altitude Hour on WRUULP Savannah, one of my favorite people and returning guests. We've had some great discussions. Is Dr. Yasif Lubecki, who's at the Armstrong campus. Well, no, you're in Statesboro. You're not at Armstrong,
right? I'm in Statesboro,
right?
Yes.
Right,
yes,
you're
yes.
In Statesboro. And you're also a member of the Savannah Council of World Affairs.
Absolutely correct. I'm a board member, actually, of Savannah Council of World Affairs, but my views do not reflect the views of my organizations.
I think that's important to give a disclaimer, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Why not?
Now, I found it interesting, something I did not think about, but you are, after having you on the show a couple of times, is a European military expert.
Well, I published a couple of books on defense policies.
Okay.
So if this makes me a military expert, I guess I am. I never served active duty, but I write and research a lot on military issues.
Well, I think I'm just fascinated, but I'm ready to dive into this conversation about Ukraine, and I know that you're going to give us some background and context for the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, and thank you for your notes to prepare me for this discussion.
Well, thank you. That's really kind of you, and thank you for having me on your station. That's really kind and nice of you, Carrie.
Thank you so much. So let's dive into... What is the origin of this conflict? It didn't just happen overnight.
Oh, absolutely. So the conflict goes by, Putin recently wrote an article in which he argues that the Russians and Ukrainians and one are one people and should live in one state, one country, right? Mm-hmm. And that history goes back 1,000 years. No, one can equally argue that the history of the conflict goes back 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, indeed, 1,000 years ago, there used to be one entity in that area called the Kievan Rus.
Hmm.
And that state was centered on Kyiv, so the current capital of Ukraine, and was an early feudal state of Eastern Slavs. Who, by the way, accepted Eastern Orthodox Christianity from Constantinople, from the seat of the Byzantine Empire. So there was a unity of sorts, of a political unity of ancestors of today's Russian and Ukrainian people. But that was broken in the 13th century. The Mongols came from Asia and destroyed the Kievan Rus. And ever since the fates of what's today's Russia and today's Ukraine have been separate, and often there was a conflict between those two areas, and they were ruled by different people and in contention with each other. Right, so the conflict and the coexistence dates back way back. But briefly, most of what's today's Ukraine was taken over by first the Grand Duchy of Lithuania and then by the Polish Kingdom. And ruled by the Poles and the Lithuanians for 500 years, which created a separate culture, separate sense of identity, a separate unit in Ukraine. And by the way, at the time also, especially in the 17th and 18th century, people, ancestors of today's Ukrainians, also tried to become their own independent state.
Wow.
Right. So there was a sense of Ukrainians being a separate people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Russia broke down, at the end of World War I, the Bolshevik Revolution, 1917, Ukraine became its own independent state between 1917 and 1920 approximately, and struggled to become an independent country. And by the way, that failed, right? But ever since, there is a strong sense of Ukrainians being a separate people from Russia. Now, by the way, in some sense, the Soviet Union reinforced it by creating a socialist Ukrainian Republic as a part of the Soviet Union, and kind of maintaining a sense of separate borders and separate identity among Ukrainians. That was a fairly complex process. So fast forward 1991, the Soviet Union breaks apart and Ukraine declared independence.
Wow.
Right? So for the last 30 years, we have independent Ukraine. That country, by the way, so Ukrainians voted for independence at the time and overwhelmingly chose to be independent from Russia and become their own country. And for the last 30 years, Ukraine has existed as an independent country. And the fate of that country has been mixed in terms of economic and political shape. Lots of hopes associated with that independence were disappointed. But by and large, Ukraine maintained its democracy between 1992 and 2012, so 30 years by now. That also means that there's a whole generation of Ukrainians who only know Ukrainian independence. That's in many ways the longest that Ukraine existed as an independent country. Now, Ukraine as a country is kind of sandwiched between the West, right, and Russia. And independent Ukraine reflected that balance between Russian influence and Western influence. But make no mistake, independent Ukraine, as it existed since 1992, featured a lot of Russian influence. The country kind of balanced between the West and Russia. And in many ways, Russia exercised that influence and in some sense even controlled Ukraine prior to 2014 or 2013. So here comes what we need to understand. What happened in 2013, 2014, there was an internal revolution in Ukraine that destroyed the pro-Russian government of Ukraine and replaced it with more pro-Western government. President Putin's reaction to that revolution was to invade Ukrainian Crimea and take it over and annex it to Russia, and then to invade eastern areas of Ukraine, Donetsk and Luhansk, and support pro-Russian separatists in those areas.
Yeah.
And wage war against Ukraine in support of those areas. So that was 2014, right? So yeah. Ever since, the conflict has remained unresolved. And what's going on recently, it's another chapter of that conflict. But remember again, what happened in 2014 is Putin lost Ukraine, in some sense, lost influence over all of Ukraine. And what he got instead is pieces of Ukraine. So not a victory for him in any sense of imagination. To the contrary, a defeat of sorts. So today what he's trying to do, and God knows what he's trying to do, is to rescue some type of victory from that defeat that he suffered in 2014.
And what did that mean for Russia when he suffered that defeat in his interest? Because what it sounds like, he wants to take over the entire part of that
Ukraine.
Continent. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So who knows if he wants to take over and invade entire Ukraine? Does he simply want to solidify the control over those pieces of Ukraine that he took over in 2014? And the problem is those pieces are not really viable, especially Crimea, without some type of control or access to the rest of Ukraine. So the so-called conquests that Putin got in 2014 are kind of a poison fruit for him. He's not sure what to do with it. Obviously, those conquests are not recognized by pretty much anybody else in the world, including Ukraine. So it's a continuous conflict. In the way of 2014 takeover of Crimea and Donbas areas, The West imposed sanctions on Russia, so those sanctions are still in place. They've been in place for the last 8 years. So Putin wants something more, because what he got in 2014 is not really what he needs. What I imagine he wishes the most is to reestablish control over entire Ukraine, which again, in some sense, Russia did have prior to 2014. But how do you reestablish control over people that you have alienated by military aggression? Ukrainian sense of national identity and anti-Russian feelings were strengthened by Putin's aggression, and the current aggression only makes it worse for him. So the problem for Putin is he has all this overwhelming military force, but it doesn't really give him political victories that he needs. And in some sense, this age where military might delivered political victories is over. And by the way, every country in the world knows it, including the United States, where our military deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan hardly gave us the type of political solutions or victories that we desired. Wow. And Putin is in a very similar type of situation.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions for you. You know, yes. In the last 24 hours, it's come out, well, the mainstream media, when I say come out, that China will be supporting interests with Russia. To me, it's not a surprise. To you, it's probably not a surprise.
No. I mean, they've been, since 1988, China and Soviet Union at the time, and today Russia, are good friends.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, they used to be enemies.
Right.
During mm-hmm. the Cold War.
Right.
Communist China and Communist Russia were enemies. But Gorbachev restored a good relationship between the Soviet Union and China, and that good relationship continued under President Yeltsin and various administrations in China, and recently under President Putin. And both China and Russia feel that their main enemy is the United States. So that friendship is not surprising, and it's not surprising that China is supporting Russia. And obviously that friendship gives Russia a lot of power and leverage. This economic center of the world is in many ways no longer the West only. Mm-hmm. China is this gigantic economic superpower. And China, for instance, can take a good number of Russian energy exports. So if we refuse to take Russian energy as a part of sanctions against aggression in Ukraine, China is happy to take extra energy from Russia, I imagine. So absolutely, that's important. And there's nothing surprising about it.
Right.
Because, again, Russia and China have had a good relationship for the last 40 years or so. No longer hostility, right? Yeah. They used to be hostile before. Yeah.
What does this mean as far as any hostility towards the United States being like the leader leading the way for NATO?
Well, so that means that there is a powerful alliance aimed against the United States, not just NATO-wise, but globally, and that's the Russian-Chinese alliance. And they already formally cooperate defense-wise. The organization is called the Shanghai Defense Organization. That involves Russia and China and countries like Kazakhstan. So absolutely, we are facing this United States. The West is facing a block of countries that are in many ways balancing against the United States. But to put it in proportion, so by the way, China and Russia are powerful countries. Their military spending together, I think, amounts to less than half of U.S. military spending alone. United States spends more on the military than the next seven countries combined. Among those seven countries, there is Russia and China and five other countries that are all allies of the United States. The military, purely military potential of United States and its allies still more than balances and dwarfs the purely military potential of Russia and China.
Wow.
That's one of the facts of the case. China is an economic superpower. It's not to be discounted. Russia is not. Russia's economy is smaller than Germany's.
Okay.
Even with most dramatic efforts at rebuilding its military power, in terms of purely conventional capability, Russia is actually a weak country compared to the Western alliance. What makes Russia into a global superpower is its nuclear weapons, where indeed Russia has parity with the United States. China built its conventional forces and is trying to build its nuclear forces, but Chinese nuclear forces are tiny compared to United States or Russia, by the way. China is clearly yet to arm or is keeping its nuclear forces as a deterrent rather than some type of force equal to the United States or even Russia. So there are important considerations and differences between those three countries.
You stated in your notes that you thought that this, the Russian military victory in conflict is predictable. What do you mean by that?
Well, no matter what, Russia is a former or current military superpower,
right,
and its military potential is so much greater than Ukraine that it's not difficult to imagine Russia having a purely conventional military victory against Ukraine. So in other words, if Putin decides to go full-scale, with a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, in terms of purely conventional modern conflict, it's very difficult to see how Ukrainian forces can stop him. Now, they can impose pain and casualties on Russia, but if Russian armored columns want to drive to Kiev and take over most of Ukraine, it's very difficult to imagine Ukrainians being able to actually stop this invasion. And the big factor in this respect is complete Russian predominance in the air. Russian air force dwarfs the air force of Ukraine. Air forces are expensive. Russia has still a very, very important domination of the air. And if you dominate the air, it's very difficult to conventionally, it's very difficult for Ukrainians to conventionally oppose Russians.
Wow.
Without anybody's help. And that's the thing. Nobody's going to defend Ukraine militarily except Ukrainians. Now, obviously, we are sending help, weapons, and so on and so forth. But President Biden and everybody else made it clear that no foreign troops are going to Ukraine because everybody wants to avoid a conflict with Russia over Ukraine for obvious reasons. Russia is a nuclear superpower. So any direct conflict with Russia risks going into nuclear escalation, and we want to avoid a global nuclear conflict. And, you know, nothing has changed. The Cold War.
I've heard the term, do you think that we're going to go to World War III, sort of like a World War I?
No, not for the time being.
Okay.
Because again, both sides are kind of carefully avoiding actually escalating to that level. No, who knows what will happen as unintended consequence of the conflict on the long term. One imaginable scenario is Putin takes over parts of Ukraine and all of Ukraine. A guerrilla war breaks out, which, by the way, that war would be horrible with a dramatic level of human suffering and casualties.
Wow.
What can break out? Let's say the West covertly or overtly supports the Ukrainian insurgency against Russia. Let's say that provokes Russia into some type of response. Let's say that provokes the West into some type of response. So possibilities of escalation on the long term are multiple, and it can degenerate into some type of global conflict. But for the time being, neither side is seeking a global conflict, and that's the thing, that, you know, in both World War One and World War Two, I think the big myth of World War One is that it was an accidental war. It wasn't.
Right.
Besides, especially Germany wanted a war. World War One, they wanted a war. It wasn't an accidental war. And by the way, same with World War II. Hitler wanted a war. He decided to invade Poland, fully knowing that he's risking a war with France and Great Britain, and the war duly came, and he was okay with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those were not accidental wars. So, in other words, accidental wars don't happen. The fact that nobody wants a global war right now matters. But on the long term, who knows?
In terms of foreign policy for the United States, to differentiate that from our work with NATO, what can we be doing? What can the president be doing to assist with NATO, but what can America do itself with our own military?
To not be
involved, but to help out, to aid.
So America is doing a lot. I was just reading the changing force posture of American troops. So we are sending extra troops to Europe as reassurance.
Mm-hmm.
About 1,000 soldiers to Romania, about 1,000 soldiers or 2,000 to Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And then, very importantly, air forces to the Baltic countries. And I just read about 30 Apache helicopters being sent to the Baltics. So wow. United States is deploying. And those are still symbolic forces, even though I wonder about those Apaches in the Baltic. So obviously all of it is part of NATO alliance, but United States is sending a military force directly to the areas neighboring Ukraine, and that's to obviously symbolically reassure the allies and deter further aggression. I think that the most important measures that the United States can take is economic sanctions, and especially with respect to global financial system and so on and so forth. That could really hurt Russia, actually, on the short term. Big deal is maintaining unity,
mm-hmm.
and telling Russia that aggression is not okay. In this respect, I think the critical dimension is that Americans stay united. And by the way, what's the American interest? Well, the interest is global order.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we have substantial economic interest in Ukraine? No. We are defending a weaker country against a stronger country with, you know, global order in mind. The notion that we no longer live in a world in which countries attack each other at will and get away with it. No, by the way, somebody can say, didn't we do the same, like during the invasion of Iraq in 2003? Yeah. And indeed, Iraq is this black eye on American foreign policy, because it looks like it was today. We understand the willful act of aggression against a country that was accused of having weapons of mass destruction and didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, That's not good. But the last time we invaded a neighbor country was, I think, Mexico in 1911.
Wow.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was General Pershing expedition into Mexico, a kind of a short border inclusion. So we don't do those things, right, by and large. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't, and nobody should. You know, otherwise we are back to, I don't know, pre-World War I environment where countries invaded each other at will. You know, that eventually led to global conflagration of World War I and World War II, and we don't want to go back to that world. And I think some sections, here's the problem, some sections of American public, I think, actually want to go back to that for some reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who think that that would be a good way to make money, but at the cost of humans dying. We just came out of, like, two years of people dying from a pandemic.
We want an orderly world,
right?
I think that's beneficial for the United States and beneficial for humanity. I mean, the notion that United States can somehow mess up the world and then make money by fishing in the dirty water of international conflict,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of harmful and ridiculous nonsense. Most importantly, it presumes the world that no longer exists.
Right.
So the world becomes what you want it to be, right? That's Gandhi. Mm-hmm. we tend to create a world in our image. So, you know, if we want to create a war, a world full of conflict and war, we certainly can. Now, don't tell me that that's the reality.
Right.
You know, the reality becomes what you want it to be.
Well, I saw the ex-president, not the 46th, but the 45th, was praising Putin. And
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Really? Like,
really?
Yeah, I was like, really?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. Like, after having armed conflict at our own capital a year ago in January, I just don't know if that trigger happy mentality is good for America's future, and I don't know if it's good for us as a leader in global conflict. I don't think that sort of mentality is healthy for our country.
I agree with you, and the problem is precisely that we have former President Trump and people like him who somehow thinks that that's perhaps what we should create, that force and ability to use force is somehow to be praised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole notion of global order is somehow detrimental to the United States, and United States should somehow create a dangerous world or live in a dangerous world in which we can leverage global conflict for America's short-term gains.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very short-sighted, dangerous, and outdated vision of the world, which does not benefit the United States or anybody on the long term.
Right.
You know, in many ways, the vision died in the trenches of World War One and World War Two, because that's the type of world that we were confronting at the time, and that didn't prove to be beneficial to anybody. This is one, since World War II, United States pursued a vision of global order. And so abandoning the policies we had since World War II, I think, is just foolishness. And so is praising dictators and aggressors.
You know, I feel like we went from the old mentality to this new world order, but it seems like the East-West shift is happening to change that difference in that north-south axis point. I feel like it's shifting again in political thought.
I agree that power is increasingly passing to countries that used to be not powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And that China, that India, that's countries of the global south. By the way, not Russia. Russia is an old power, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not passing to Russia. Russia had its day in history, and right now it's more of a residual power. On the long term, demographics and economics do not favor Russia. So Russia is not part of that global power shift, but China and India and so on and so forth is. So by the way, this power shift is a reality and is good in a sense that most of humanity deserves to exercise power commensurate with its numbers,
mm-hmm.
and economic potential. So I don't have a problem with the power shift away from the United States and the West towards the developing world. The real question is, what type of world will that shift create? And I think in the interest of everybody, East and West, is that this is an orderly world in which countries can peacefully pursue their goal to improve lives of everybody. If that shift leads us back to the world of power competition and war, we have a problem.
Wow.
So it's not the power shift per se which is a problem, but to in which direction is that power shift leading? But if this is the true picture, this whole picture of truculent Russia trying to fish in the dirty water and exercising its residual military power to mess up the world, in many ways is so anachronistic, right? It's about the past, not about the present or the future. Russia is trying to assert the principles of politics that are long dead, and you cannot simply revive by waging war, somehow hoping that you will succeed. It's American experience recently that shows us that military power is of limited utility. Mm-hmm. All this fascination. One thing that former President Trump mentioned when praising Putin is, he said, "Oh, I never saw so many tanks." It's like, are you seven?
Right.
Well, you know, by the way, you know, here it is. So I write on military topics. I research military topics. I guess I can tell you that I have a large collection of military models at home, and I love tanks. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk about it when I talk seriously.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, I'm fascinated with tanks when I do my 7-year-old identity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to think that those things are decisive.
Right.
They're not. That's the world has moved on.
Right.
I mean, really? That vision of power is outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Russia represents. The future is China, the future is India, the future is Africa, the future is Latin America, where most of humanity lives.
Mm-hmm.
And these people deserve to live in prosperity and peace. And hopefully we are shifting towards the world in which more and more people in the world can live in prosperity and peace. And hopefully it's a peaceful shift.
Yes.
And that's the long-term vision that we want. By the way, what should we want for Russia and Ukraine? We want to see the end game is democratic Russia.
Right.
Living together with democratic Ukraine. Perhaps one day, 100 years from now, those two countries becoming part of the same union based on the principle of mutual consent and agreement, not military aggression.
Right. This is such...
So, you know, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, if one day, you know, Russian Ukrainian people want to be quote unquote one people, and it's based on mutual consent, right? Who are we to oppose it? That'd be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's something completely different than forcefully uniting Russia and Ukraine by military aggression. And by the way, that's counterproductive to that long-term vision. Putin is like an abusive husband who is beating up his wife and wonders why she doesn't love him.
Right.
And he somehow thinks that more beating is going to deliver greater love.
Wow.
And that's genius.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To be praised. Really?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, and he's not winning, he's losing.
Right.
If his long-term objective is to exercise influence in Ukraine, then his every move is putting this objective further away. Yeah. It's creating Ukrainian nationalism, it's creating mistrust and hostility towards Russia in the rest of Europe. NATO is getting stronger militarily, not weaker. The reaction towards Russian aggression in 2014 was dramatic military buildup, especially of countries like Poland, Romania, and the Baltics. Those countries are arming and strengthening their capacity against Russia. They might think about acquiring nuclear weapons. Finland and Sweden are thinking about joining NATO. Putin is creating an anti-Russian Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If his goal is to exercise influence in Europe, he's getting the reverse. How is that genius?
It's not. And I think that's what we forget, that, you know, that's why so many people may be turned off, like, whether it's the 45th, and I don't even like saying his name personally, but, even Russia today, like, you know, most people want to stay out of conflict and they just want to be left alone to be able to live their lives harmoniously. Correct. Without war, you know what?
Without war, yes.
How
yes,
would like the human society be able to evolve without war? I think that's in the back of everyone's. They would love that sort of security, but we don't have that. We don't live in a world without conflict.
So. We don't, but there's actually a considerable body of research that shows that the world is evolving to be a more peaceful world.
Wow.
And I understand that, you know, we don't see it when you watch the news that focuses on war and crime, but I think that the book to read is where they have all the soldiers gone. And okay. there's a couple of other books recently written that show clearly that violence of all kinds is disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just war, but crime, domestic violence, violence against animals. The world is evolving towards a more peaceful world. The world used to be stunningly violent.
Wow.
And it's becoming more peaceful, and it's a good thing. So in other words, don't tell me that human nature is violent and conflict is increasing, because that's not the case.
Right.
There's less and less war in the world, and that's a good thing. And it is happening. It is an objective trend.
Wow. Well, Dr. Lubecki, I enjoy you coming on the show. Any last thoughts that we should leave our listening audience with? I know that you probably need to get to class as well, but this has been such a great discussion, and I hope you come on again.
Well, I will. Thank you. That's really kind of you. My last thought is we should be in it for the long haul.
Okay.
That there might be an impression that Putin is succeeding, and there might be people telling you that somehow he's a genius and everything he's doing is successful, but if United States stands by its principles and peacefully pushes back, the people like Putin will not succeed on the long term.
Okay.
And it might take years, but I would be hopeful, and I would believe in our ideals, regardless mm-hmm. of setbacks that can happen. My recent favorite show is Ted Lasso, which it's a American football coach who goes to coach soccer in England, mm-hmm. so just completely ridiculous idea, and actually becomes very successful. And part of his success is this stunning optimism that flies in the face of all the nasty stuff that people throw at him. How about believing in our ideals and believing in a better world, and then taking setbacks as opportunity to learn, and sticking to it. So some faith and belief in humanity and what we stand for, the better parts of human nature, the better angels of our nature, that's necessary, especially in the coming days that might be really dark.
Right. Well, Dr. Lubecki, thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to you coming on the Verb Altitude Hour again on WRUU LP Savannah. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back again on Saturday from 8 to 9. Well, not 8 to 9. 6 to 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to the Verb Altitude Hour on WRUU LP Savannah.
Thank you.